Hello, everyone. This is Rusty Gilligan from Mac in Trouble, and you're listening to Superheroes Speak.
When creative forces collide, they do great things. Head Shrinkers Press believes in the fusion of creative forces, the typed electrons and ballpoint scrawls that fuel our writing, every stylus that glides across glass, every pen trailing ribbons of India ink, the explosion of colors splashed freshly on finished pages. When those forces come together, they make great comics. They make Head Shrinkers Press comics. Every day, we wake up with only one thing in mind, to bring you the absolute best titles our team can create. From the outermost reaches of the galaxy to the Badlands of the West, inside every Head Shrinkers title, you're sure to be going on an adventure you won't soon forget. Let us show you what happens when creative forces collide. Visit us right now at www.headshrinkerspress.com or come chat with us on our Facebook page. Head Shrinkers Press, where creative forces collide.
Welcome to the continued podcast adventures of three opinionated guys with mics and too much free time. Strong enough to stop a speeding movie rumor. More powerful than a bad comic book event. Able to waste hours of time asking stupid questions to people who have better things to do. It's Dave, Ben, and John. It's Superhero Speak.
Hey everyone, you're listening to Superhero Speak, and I'm your host Dave.
And John.
And this week we have a very special guest with us. He is an artist that's worked on such titles as Age of Apocalypse, Age of Ultron, Avengers AI, Fantastic Four, and Spider-Verse 2, among many others from Marvel. And he has his own book coming out called Man Plus. And since I'm horrible with names, John, you introduce him.
We'd like everybody to welcome Andre Araujo.
Perfect. Hello, everybody. Thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
Oh, no. Thank you for doing this. Question I like to always open up with is, have you always been interested in comics?
Yes, ever since I remember. I don't remember, some creators remember the title that pulled them in. I can't remember that. I always remember being interested in comics.
Oh, okay, cool. And so I guess then growing up, is that what got you into drawing and being an artist?
Yeah, I always enjoyed drawing and making up my own stories, and comics always felt very natural to me. I remember that when I couldn't read, I already had a bunch of Disney books, you know, Donald Duck and Scrooge and so on. And my mother would read them to me, and whenever she couldn't do that, I would make up my own stories. So I was carrying around the books with me already. I remember being on kindergarten and drawing Ninja Turtles and things like that. So I was always interested in that.
Ah.
Yeah.
Now you're making me feel old that turtles were around when you were in kindergarten.
Oh, God.
It was on the early 90s.
Yes, yes. I was in high school. So.
Hey, we all get old.
Yeah, this is true.
TV is being dead, so getting old is a good thing.
So, I assume you grew up in Portugal.
Yes.
Was that, how was the comic book industry, or how is comic books there? Because I know in like some countries, at least going back 30 years ago, 40 years ago, comics didn't always make it to the other countries as they do today. Mm-hmm. Were there titles that you didn't get in Portugal growing up?
Yeah, well, here you know that we have the French comics as well, and Belgian comics, and all of that. So it's for starters, it's a completely different industry over here. We get a lot of American titles as well. When I was a kid, we did get American comics translated in Portuguese. So I was reading Spider-Man when I was fairly young already. I was also reading lots of other stuff. But the industry in Portugal, I mean, we can separate in two things. One is the publishing industry. There are lots of titles in Portuguese. There were lots of titles when I was young in Portuguese. I never felt there is so little to read. No, I always had choices, you know, American, superheroes, Disney, European from French, comic books, all kinds of them, you know, Blueberry from Webby, so more adult stuff, sci-fi, but also Asterix and Obelix, Lucky Luck, all of that stuff was around me in Portuguese. Then you have the other part, which is for the creators. And we are a small country, and it's not possible to do comics as a job in Portugal. So I could not live as a comic book artist if I was only working for the national marketer in Portugal. There are many Portuguese creators, and they publish in Portuguese, yes, but they usually have other jobs. And the situation is pretty much the same till today that was when I was a kid.
Okay. So then how did you start? Did you at least start doing Portuguese comics? What was your first job working in comics?
Well, which was for Marvel, my first job. Because of this that I was talking about. So you couldn't hope to become a Portuguese comic book artist.
Right.
It's you could hope to do a job and to someday publish a book. And that was what I was hoping for. Eventually, but I never forced it until I ended up college. I'm an architect. I graduated as an architect.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started because it was hard to find a job. I finished my degree in 2009, so right in the center of the economical crisis. And I couldn't find a job. And I started thinking, I always loved comics. Why don't I try it for reals? And so I started drawing a lot every day, creating many stories. And I eventually met, a couple of months after that, C.B. Cebulski from Marvel. He was in Portugal on a comic convention we have here. And I met him there and I showed those drawings. They weren't very good, but I got in touch. And from there, I still worked 1 year as an architect, but I was already really into comics. And I did try some of my own stuff, tried some publishers while I was working. And I always kept in touch with Marvel people. They were interested, even though I wasn't there yet at the level that they demanded.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually I was accepted by Marvel. They said, okay, we are ready. Let's work together. And that is my first job in comics.
Oh, wow. That's actually pretty interesting. They liked you enough and you just kept working at it till you got better. I know a lot of people who have tried to, you know, break into the industry and they go straight to either Marvel or DC and they hear they're not good enough and they give up right away. But I guess, you know, you were encouraged to keep going.
Yeah, I think that the fact that I am an architect and that I had been through 5 years of architecture school where it's an artistic discipline as well. So you have a lot of that thing where you show your work to a teacher and he's going to correct you and say, this is not good enough. You know, you need to improve this, this and that. And that's basically what I heard from Marvel. And I was trained to understand and interpret those things and those indications. And I knew how to deal with that situation. So it never crossed my mind that I was not going to do it. I felt that, yeah, they are telling me the truth. You know, this is what's wrong. And they made a few points about storytelling and narrative. And I studied those things very hard. I studied other authors. I studied books that explain things about that. And I learned more and more until I was eventually, and I drew a lot of stories, a lot of stuff that was never published, created a lot of things that evolved into and are evolving still into many other creator-owned stuff, including Man Plus. And that's always how I saw it, you know. This, if they are interested, it's because they think that there is some quality. And whenever they gave me a critique, I always looked at it from the practical point of view. Are they correct about this or not? And they usually are.
Right. So I'm just kind of curious too. You mentioned your mother earlier when you were growing up. So what did you tell her when, you know, what did she say when you said, oh, I've got a job working for Marvel Comics. I'm going to draw comics for a living.
my family and my parents, of course, at the top of that, they were always fairly enthusiastic of my drawing and my interest in comics. But because of the market here in Portugal being so small and seeming so difficult. And let's not forget, we are talking about, I went to college in 2003, 2004.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a time where social networks were starting around, and this idea of working for Marvel from Portugal was kind of strange still. Even though the email was there, it was a more, this idea of being constantly connected to someone was not still something that was ingrained in our brains. So it seemed fairly distant and fairly difficult to do that, you know. And when I was without a job and I started moving into comics, they were always supportive. But yeah, the moment that I said that I heard from Marvel, hey, we want you to work with us, that was a moment that they were very happy with, you know, because they knew that that was what I wanted the most, to work on comics.
Right, right.
Is the I have to ask, is the, you said that there's a local comics, I guess, business, mm-hmm. where you're located. So, you, Marvel, of course, they distribute worldwide to most countries, but, you know, the characters are, let's face it, they're all Americanized.
Yes.
They're all white. So did you ever try, like, when you got into comics, did you first start with like a localized, you know, comic where, you know, with Spanish heroes or, you know, that sort of thing? Or were you, did you start with Marvel and are you thinking about, you know, doing something more localized? Because diversity in comics is a question that keeps getting raised these days.
Yes, yes. I'm aware that, well, here in Portugal, we don't have, we have local authors, but what they write about is nothing near to superheroes, you know. It's more diversified, it's different, it's fairly different, it's much more European, you know. So mm-hmm. I've never felt that what you say about, oh, they are all American, I cannot relate to any of this, because they, first of all, they are fairly relatable even though they are American. Particularly when you are a kid and, you know, you see a superhero. And the stories that we were getting were stories from, I remember reading, particularly the story of Gwen Stacy when she died. I remember that one. So it was stories of that, that time that were translated. We were not getting the stuff that, was not just stuff that was being published at the time. You know, we were getting collections from Stan Lee and Jack Kirby and all of that stuff. And I was reading a lot of other stuff as well from European comics. You know, I mentioned Asterix, Looky Look, from Disney. So all of that stuff gave me my fix on the things that I wanted. Adventure, science fiction later on with Valerian, with lots of stuff from Moebius. And then, of course, manga with Akira and Ghost in the Shell and all of that stuff. So I never felt that need to search for a Portuguese superhero or a Portuguese story per se, because I was finding the things that I was interested in, and I broadened my interests throughout American comics, European comics, Japanese comics. So I was getting the stuff that I wanted from all of these markets. And I've read and I still read from the three, lots and lots of titles from some stuff. Sometimes I pick up stuff from the 80s, then stuff that's being published now. You know, I always go back and forth and I always look for books that match whatever it is that I'm interested currently.
Mm.
Cool. So so now I'm curious too. You had said, yeah, of course, 2003 social networks were just coming about. And I, correct me if I'm wrong, is the first title you worked on, was that Fantastic Four?
It was the FF, the Future Foundation.
Oh, Future Foundation, okay.
Yes.
And Jonathan Hickman was the writer on those books.
Yeah, yeah.
So what was that like? Like, did he send you a full script and then you had to draw from that? Was it a collaborative with him? And how did that work at the time over the internet?
Oh, yeah. You know, the process when I started working for Marvel was kind of frustrating because frustrating for me because I was eager to start and I had been in touch with them for a couple of years. Eventually in the beginning of 2012, they mm-hmm. said, okay, we want to work with you. And then I only started in July.
Okay.
Yes. Yes, it was July. What happens is that until then I was waiting for my chance. And when you are starting, I suppose this is true for most artists, but at least for me, it was, I don't have a book assigned to me. They So I have to wait until they find an opening, a 12-page story or something like that. And I was going to do something first with Brian Michael Bendis for, I think it was for New Avengers. Later, C.B. Sapolsky told me, later on. And I was supposed to start working on April or something like that. And I didn't. And then I had to wait until the artist that was doing Future Foundation, he was unable to do that issue. So they asked me. The script was fully done, completely written. I talked with Jonathan and Joseph saying, hello, my name is Andrea. And he was very kind and he offered any help that I needed. I sent layouts. The full script was on my hand, so I sent all of the layouts. And they approved it, and I started drawing it. There was not much of a collaboration because that was not the opportunity that was being present. You know, I was just, I guess it's true for most artists when they are starting. You wait for your opportunity and you fill in a gap that needs to be attended.
Right. Okay. So I also just recently read an interview with you actually for Marvel.com, and one of the things that struck me as interesting is, you said one of the things that influences you or one of the things you're interested in is the idea of technology as an extension of humanity,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to like the Terminator, where, you know, technology is the destruction of man. So the idea of like Iron Man and the extremists, virus is something that interests you more, right? And is that the kind of things that you gravitate towards?
Yeah, Iron Man, I don't know. The tone that I was, if you want to see what interests me more, is you go read Man Plus and you see it's right there.
Okay.
Probably that's the tone that I'm more interested in. Iron Man, yes, as a basic principle, matches this description because he uses an armor that extends his body, you know, augments his body functions of strength, of power, of resistance, all of those things. Yeah, that idea was pretty fascinating to me, and it occurred to me that clearly, you know, technology as an extension of man, that is the basic principle of Man Plus. It became clear to me when I was studying for my master in architecture that I did. And I was reading a lot of stuff about architecture as an extension of man. And of course, I just replaced the idea of architecture with technology because architecture is a kind of technology, both conceptual and physical, that we have. And so if you start thinking like that, you understand really how everything is built around the human body, you know, since clothing, house, cars, cities. The human body is the scale for all of that stuff that we use, that we do. And our needs are the seeds for everything that we build. So if you take that a step further, and we are on the brink of that in the moment that we live in, as technology keeps getting smaller, and we are now seeing real opportunities for the human body to become better, and at least I'm not even saying about making us a cyborg or something like that, but mostly about taking care of diseases and our health, stuff like that. I mean, it's fairly easy to imagine today a future of our blood filled with nanomachines that attack every disease whenever they appear. You don't need to worry about antibiotics or something like that. And wherever you go from time to time to the doctor to get an update, you know, they shoot you with a new stuff with a new nanomachines or things like that. That interests me a lot, and I think that's an interesting concept, and it moved and fueled all of Man Plus, all of the story.
And that's a very scary subject because I mean, yes, according to most science fiction writers, you get to, like, if the minute we actually really perfect nanomachines is like the first day of the end of the human race. The first day we come up with AI, within an hour, the human race is gone. I mean, it's so the progression of technology is, and the chances for it to go wrong. It's one of those things where, I forget who said it. They said that the world is going to end in one of two ways, and both are going to involve a scientist, and it's either going to end with the scientist saying "Eureka" or "Oops," and that's pretty much it. I mean, but And the number of storylines you could probably come up with, and which you are with Man Plus, for things to go wrong, and yes. the social commentary, and the discussion about how technology should affect us. Are we going the way of the Borg? Or are we going Johnny Mnemonic? Or, you know, all this mm-hmm. stuff, and how it fits in. And at one point, are we still human, or are we no longer human? You picked a really good genre there.
Yeah. No, that bit that you say is going. I don't think that we are there yet, but it's a. I think that's kind of inevitable that at some point we will wonder what it is human or not, and that is also that's one of the main themes of Man Plus. And but I don't have that. Yes, we have some. It's pretty easy to come up with an apocalyptic view of technology. But I'm more interested in other things, like the nitty-gritty stuff, you know, the little things, the details, the daily lives, how that is going to change. Because I think that's what we will see more often than a scientist that destroyed an entire country because he clicked the wrong button. Mm-hmm. I think that we are going to be more worried in the future about things like someone carrying a prosthetic arm that has a gun inside that you can activate, like you activate your hand, you know, mm-hmm. in the same way that you move your hand. Someone is going one day to have an arm that has a gun inside, and it will work the same way. You just have to think about firing, and it will fire. Things like that are now possible to do, though very expensive, and they will happen more often in the future. And so I think that these bits of cyborg advancements and things like that, we will bring us the same pain that, for example, AK-47 does, you know, which is, it is a kind of weapon of mass destruction, because if you count all the deaths that came from that weapon, you see that the power of destruction that it has. And I think that this type of technology will probably bring us problems like that, small localized problems that we'll have to deal with. We will have to legalize and think about ways of how do we describe a prosthetic bit of a body that can be used as a weapon. Imagine, for example, I was talking about someone having a gun inside Eden, but imagine that you are a construction worker, mm-hmm. and you lose an arm. So when they install you a new one, so that you can keep doing your job, they're probably going to install you an arm that has double the strength of a human arm. You can crush a skull with that thing. How is that thing qualified, for example? Things like that is the stuff that interests me most about the immediate future. Immediate, I mean, in 20 years or 30 years. Mm-hmm. I think that these are going to be concerns more than the hysteria about AI destroying us all. First of all, we need to discover how the hell we are going to make an artificial intelligence, because there is no such thing yet, and we are not even close to get to something like that. We must not mistaken power of processing and memory on our mm-hmm. computers with intelligence and creativity right. and humor. We don't know how the brain works. That is what you read scientists talking about. They don't know how it works. They don't understand how the learning process works, which is what you need to make an artificial intelligence, because right now, the only thing that we have are machines that do exactly what we tell them to do. And nothing goes beyond that point yet. And we are not near to do that. So we need to relax about that and worry about other things first.
Yeah, that's so true. I mean, it's, as you're saying this, I'm actually smiling really big, because it's one of those arguments. I have friends who sit there and talk about AI and how it's going to be the horrible thing, and because Bill Gates made his big speech about artificial intelligence, and it's like, but we're not even close to AI yet. Not we don't know how the human brain works yet, so how can we possibly recreate that, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and
we've seen it. I'm sorry, just to complete, we have seen I forgot his name. Is the Tesla owner and the guy that made the PayPal, what is his name, the inventor, he owns SpaceX too.
Elon Musk.
Yes, exactly. Elon Musk and other billionaires that they created a fund with loads and loads of money, so that they are working on ways to use artificial intelligence for the better of humanity. And I think that Bill Gates is on that thing too. So, you know, there are lots of people working on the right direction with this, even though Stephen Hawking keeps scaring us all and saying that we need to leave this planet immediately, otherwise we are going to obliterate ourselves.
All right, just as an aside, since we're talking about like prosthetic arms with guns in them and everything, NSA, if you're listening in, please enjoy the rest of our podcasts and please go to Andre's site. He's got a great comic. I'm sure Overwatch or Olympus or whatever they're calling it now, that's, you know, checking the internet out constantly, just picked up our show.
Yes.
Hey, Dave, I've been thinking. I wonder what it'd be like if superheroes were real and managed by the government.
Funny you should mention that, because our friends over at Outpouring Comics have a new book called Freedom Fighter that is all about the world's first government-owned and funded superhero.
Awesome. I'll have to check that out. I'd also imagine, if there wasn't oversight, superhero-like mutations could actually lead to a pretty bleak world.
Well, it seems some of the guys at Outpouring agree with you there. Because they're also premiering a new book called Psychosis, which is all about a future where powered mutation leads to mass destruction of the human population and subjugation by an elite group of powered people and rich humans.
Wow, so how do I get my hands on these books?
That's the easy part. Both these books are available in digital format on drivethru.com and gumroad.com. And if you want to pre-order a physical copy, you can go to outpouringcomics.storymv.com to reserve your copy today. And while you're there, you can also check out Outpouring's other amazing titles. Hope you enjoy them.
Oh, you know I will.
Okay, those sound cool. But what if I want something else from my comics, like horror or monsters?
Well, that's easy too. Outpouring features great comics like the award-winning Inheritance, and now they're bringing you the John Orlando collection from the 90s. Plus, if you love comedy and fun stuff, they're also doing Mac and Trouble from Rusty Gilligan. So, with all these great books and all these great things to choose from, you guys should be checking out Outpouring Comics. So head on over to outpouring.com today. So, we've talked about the themes about Man Plus, but what's the actual story about for the people listening at home?
Yes. Well, the story, I try to keep it simple. I think because it's a small book and it's only 4 issues long. Mm-hmm. So I had to contain a bit the plot. I wrote the first version of the plot and then I simplified it a bit, merging some groups, you know, some factions and things like that, and some characters to make it more simple. It starts simply with this idea that an android is on the loose on a city. It's called Olisipo City. It's a city in Portugal, a fictional city. And he's on the loose, I mean, he's walking around and it looks strange, looks malfunctioning. And then a group of cyborgs, heavily armed, arrive with a car and they try to grab him and to shoot him on the legs and they try to capture it, you know. And then we follow up the investigation from the police force led by a police called Rodrigo. He's a detective and he's investigating where does the android comes from. And why are these people after it? And that's basically the center plot of it, discovering what the android is, where is he coming from, and who are the group that is on pursuit of the android. So then you have a bunch of conflicts that come from that naturally, because the cyborgs are firing around on the streets and they want to stop the violence and go to the bottom of the truth.
Cool. So. It's a science fiction novel with a bit of a mystery in it.
Yeah, it's a police procedural, I guess you can say that.
Oh, okay.
It's a thriller. Yeah, a police procedural story. You know, they follow the leads, they investigate, they go around, they grab the bits that they have from the first crime scene. You know, it's the first scene of the book. There are 3 pages where I showed the city on the opening of the first issue. Mm-hmm. And then we go into the first scene where really there is some plot development. And it's that, and they go investigate after the shooting of cyborgs versus the android, and they go from there. You know, they pick up the beats from there, the bullets. They analyze the stuff. I like that stuff too, the detailed plot style. Even though the plot overall is simple, it is detailed, I think. So that's why I'd say it's a procedural kind of story. But yeah, it's a mystery. It's a police mystery, science fiction thing.
Cool. So, and then that's, you said it's going to be a four issue, I guess, miniseries.
Yeah.
And when's the first issue out?
It's already out by the time that we are recording this. It came out on January 20.
Manpluscomic.com, right?
Oh, yeah. It's being published. It was being published as a web comic. So you can read the first three issues there. Yep. And we stopped when the first number came out. So you can grab first issue now on paper and print. It's I advise that you, if you enjoy the webcomic, that you do so for two reasons. First, comics, in my opinion, look better on print, but that's not what I was going to say. That print specifically, Titan took really good care of it, you know. And the colorist, who is Arcia Rosgar, he colored the comic. I mean, he did an astonishing job. It was a pleasure to work with him. He's a friend of mine, and the colors translated beautifully into the paper. I mean, he did a perfect job, and the printing is perfect. It looks really nice. And secondly, because we have extras on the printed issue about the characters that are on the book, and we will have extras on all issues regarding the characters and other stuff that I wrote specifically as an extra. For example, on first issue, you have History of Olisip. A bit of history about the city, how it came, how it appeared, because it is a fictional city after all. And I made up all of that stuff, so it's worth the book.
Yeah. And speaking of that, I mean, I've browsed through it. I'm still, I didn't get to read the whole thing yet, but one of your characters, there's a woman there in green with page boy haircut and orange glasses.
Oh, yeah.
The older woman. She looks exactly like Linda Hunt, who plays Maddie on NCIS Los Angeles. I mean, exactly. did you base some of these characters on other people, or were these out of your imagination? Because either that or she's like the evil twin or something.
For legal reasons, I'm going to say that it's all my imagination. No, yes. What I usually do is, yeah, that's a bit of a nod to the actress, which is an amazing actress.
Yes.
In that case. Because she has a very cartoonish look, and I will pick that up every now and then. I don't base the characters themselves on other actors or something like that. I usually don't do that. What I do is, and you can see that the other people are more on my style than anything else. And what I do is sometimes, yes, I pick up specifically faces. It can be some family, for example. If it fits my style well, you know, if they use a strange haircut, something like that, big glasses, I can pick that up. But usually what I do is that I drown myself on a reference from the stuff that I like. For example, I pick up stuff from Ghost in the Shell, from Blade Runner, from Akira, from lots of other things. And I look at all of that, see what I like, generally speaking, and then I draw my own thing. So that I don't base myself on one person's work only or one specific character from a book or something like that to avoid copying entirely something. Mm, that's right. Usually how I go.
Oh, and I want to say this before I forget for our listeners. Man Plus is the print edition is out from Titan Comics. Yeah. And then I know in the United States you can't always find Titan Comics in your local comic book shop, so you can buy it from titancomics.com. So just, I want to make sure I say that before I forget.
Yeah. No, go buy it, please.
Yes, definitely. So you're doing the four issue miniseries. Do you have a plan to do more within this world, or do you have another story that you're going to do after this?
I have lots and lots of stuff. I really do. I've been creating lots of things over the past few years. This is the first one to see the light of day. I do have at least two stories, two ideas. One of them is a fairly, I haven't written much about it, but I have lots of notes and things like that for a sequel for Man Plus. I have a story in my mind. I know what I want to write about. Mm-hmm. So definitely I want to do another Man Plus story. It's a standalone story as well. You know, it's miniseries is the way to go for me on the Man Plus book. It's the best way. I want to tell a story, get in, get out, tell a good story. 4 to 8 issues, not longer than that. And I look for whatever the chance is next, if there are a good opportunity to do the Man Plus story, I will do that. If not, I have plenty of other ideas, and I will definitely work on creator own material still this year, new creator own material, after I've wrapped up my current assignment with Marvel. It's not Man Plus, it's another thing that's set at this point. And next year, I don't know, maybe Man Plus book 2 or something else. I have plenty of ideas. I have plenty of creations.
Cool. And so you said that, you know, we know that the market's really small in Portugal. How about, have you been to conventions or, you know, not just as a goer, but have you presented at conventions yet?
Yeah, I've been invited to to a few conventions in the last few years. We have a fairly healthy convention thing going on. We have very interesting conventions. We have a one that's called, it's in Amadora, which is a town near Lisbon. Mm-hmm. And it's a well-known festival here in Europe. For example, Moebius has been there and other big authors. Mike Deodato too, you know, the Brazilian artist from Marvel. He has been there recently. We have another one that's... It's in Beja, which is another Portuguese town, which has received also fairly good authors, including, you probably guys, I don't know if you are aware, but there is a book called Valerian. It's a science fiction book. It's very, very well known here in Portugal. In Portugal as well.
Mm-hmm.
The author is, the artist is Jean-Claude Mézières. He was there on that festival as well. It's just the stuff has been on the, it's made the rounds because it's a European science fiction book where you can see that Star Wars took a lot from it. And I mean, really a lot of stuff that you, Millennium Falcon, Darth Vader, the princess in the bikini, you know,
really?
All of that. It's taken from, I mean, it's stolen or anything, but it's inspired on a lot of that book. And he was here too. So we have good conventions with good authors that come here. And we recently had a Comic-Con in Portugal as well. So it's the same model that you see on the United States. Same kind of stuff with that, with actors and actresses and lots of artists. Brian Vaughan was here, for example. All of that. So yeah, I've been to a couple of them, including that Comic-Con. And it's nice to see that there is an interest in Portugal. It's just that the market is small. That's right. The only problem.
Right, right. But I was gonna also ask. So when you're on the other side of the table, you know, you're not a fan. You're an mm-hmm. artist. What was that experience like the first time you did that?
Oh, it's interesting because you see, it's always. I think that's one of the best things. It's when you see that people that come just to, I mean, not just to, but also to talk to you, and they are curious about how did you start working for Marvel? How did you get here? What's it like to work for Marvel? And they are fans of the books. They bring the books to sign. It's really a great experience to talk to the readers. And I've done that in New York Comic Con too. Two years ago, I think, I was there, and Marvel asked me to go to a signing too, and people came there, they enjoyed Avengers AI and things like that, and they were interested in knowing more and seeing more and know a little sketch. It's pretty good to meet with the readers, and I hope that I can do that, particularly now with Man Plus, because that would be, I think, more interesting even.
Oh, so you were in New York Comic Con in 2014?
I think, yeah, it was 2014.
Oh, okay. I was there. You know, it's funny because I'm friends with Greg Horn, so I work at his table with him at New York yeah. Comic Con, and it's just funny how, you know, it's a small world, even though you're in Portugal.
Yes, I was there. Yes, I went there for 2012 and 2014. Yes, and in 2014, Marvel asked me to. I did a signing on their booth. That was it. But it was cool to meet the readers.
Yeah. No. I mean, and it's. I mean, it's funny because I've been going to New York Comic Con for a little while now, and that's another one that's gotten so big compared to how it started. And it's interesting. I mean, you know, that's kind of why I was asking, you know, because the conventions here have been around for a long time, but they were always really small, a couple mm-hmm. artists. You never really had celebrities, you know, and then they've gotten bigger and bigger and bigger, and it's all spectacle now. I mean, you said there's celebrities and at your convention and all too. So I guess yes. It's the same kind of thing.
We have the two types of conventions. I was telling the others that I was talking about, where you had Moebius coming and Jean-Claude Mézier and those European artists and Mike Deodato too. They were focused on comics only. That's the Comic-Con model. It's a new thing that is starting out. But yeah, I understand that you say. But also, I was very pleased when I went to New York, because I had that idea that it was all spectacle. But the artist alley was really cool. You know, it was like a small convention separated from the rest.
Mm-hmm.
It was literally separated from the rest because it was on a different room. But it was very vibrant. There was lots of people there. The artist was selling a lot of stuff. I was really pleased to go there and see that the interest on comics is going at full speed still. People still go there and still go talk to artists, even if they are removed from all the rest, which was the case there. And I think that in the end, if you bring more people and they end up to see comics and be interested in comics too, that's a good thing. I think that's, if the convention is laid out clearly, mm-hmm. it can be a good thing. So if you go there and see, oh, the artists are there, they are drawing live, I can go and I see. That's always a fascinating thing, particularly for people that don't draw, don't have interest in drawing, and they go and they see, and seems like magic sometimes, you know? You see a guy drawing something yes. in 5 minutes and think, how the hell is that possible? And that's always a fun thing to see, for children to go and see, and it gets people immediately interested in whatever the artist has there on sale.
Yeah, I will say that. It's one of the things that I love about comics is the artistry. And like, when I first went to conventions as a comic book fan, a couple times I would see an artist drawing and I would just stop and like watch them draw. You know, it's how I met J.G. Jones and Jim Lee. One year, I was watching J.G. draw for like 10 minutes and then he looks up, he goes, oh, can I help you? I'm like, oh no, I don't want to interrupt you. I'm just enjoying this, you yeah, know? And the same thing with Jim Lee. He was behind the a DC table and he was drawing Batman, and I just did the same thing. He's like, oh, I'm sorry, did you want an autograph? I'm like, no, that I don't want to bother you. I just want to watch you draw.
Everybody loves seeing, everybody stops whenever someone else is drawing. I went to a few times there to the artist alley, and I would just go around and I would stick. I remember Jeff Darrow, for example, he was there and mm-hmm. he was drawing on some comics, and he's one of my favorite artists. He is also very nice. He's really a great person. And I just stood there watching him drawing some stuff, you know. That was fun. He and other artists. I remember Eric Canetti was there too, drawing. I remember just stooding there watching them. It's something that I love to do, even though that's what I do for a living too.
Yes. Cool. So I have a question. You're obviously a huge sci-fi fan.
Yeah.
I'm just out of curiosity, what would be your favorite science fiction movie?
What is my favorite science fiction movie?
Yes.
Oh, it's I'd say picking just one always seems reductive to me. So I can say, for example, Blade Runner, okay. 2001, Space Odyssey, and Alien. Those three, for example, some of my favorite movies ever.
Oh wow, cool.
You don't pick losers. Those
no, I like the good stuff, you know.
Yeah.
So then there's a good question, a good follow-up question to that. There's all this talk about doing a Blade Runner sequel. How do you feel about that?
Oh, I'm fairly open to those kinds of things. I mean, it's some people get very, very upset. The first movie is not going anywhere. It's still there. I love it. It's probably, if I have to say what is my favorite movie, I will most likely say either Blade Runner or 2001. It doesn't bother me too much. Ridley Scott is involved. He's not directing, but he's involved. Harrison Ford is involved. I mean, what's the worst that can happen? It's the movie is bad and nothing more happens with Blade Runner, and we still have the first one. The books that the movie is inspired on also got sequels from other authors and things like that. And the first book from Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the full title. It's still there. It's still a very appreciated book, even though there are sequels from other authors and things like that. So it doesn't bother me. I mean, I'm interested on it because Blade Runner is one of my favorite movies, because Ridley Scott is involved and Harrison Ford as well. I don't know if it's going to be any good or not, but we will see. I will judge it when it comes out.
Right. No, I definitely agree with that attitude. Like, there were people when the Star Wars prequels came out and they said they ruined the original movie. Like, no, the original movies are still what they are. You can still go back and watch them and enjoy them. It doesn't affect, you know, Phantom Menace doesn't ruin New Hope.
No, in that specific case, because they tried to retell some of this repaint some of the things that that were concepts on the first movie, and they slightly changed with the prequels or things like that. But even that, if you like the first three movies, the original trilogy, you go ahead and you see it, and that's it. You don't need to be bothered by the existence of something that you don't like.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, personally, I wouldn't worry about it, because this movie is going to be where they tie in the two franchises of Alien and Blade Runner, and it'll be awesome.
Oh my God. Jesus Christ. Shut up. Don't say that.
or you find out that Blade Runner is like in the history behind the Alien movies. And
no, the big problem with that is that it will need to be mixed with Predator as well, right?
Yes.
I have a problem, for example, with things like that. I mean, it doesn't bother me that it exists. But in that case, Predator and Alien, for example, they are completely different movies in tone and in conception and in history. And I'm sorry, in story. So when you mix the two, it makes no sense at all. Only the battles. Yeah, it's a cool idea, but that's just it. But again, it doesn't bother me. I just don't go and don't see it if I don't like it.
Well, let's just say it would have made sense had they done a good movie about it. But what we got was AVP.
Yeah, but I would say that there is no good movie that can come out of that.
Well, okay. So speaking of movies and knowing that we're in a world where movie companies are always looking for comic book properties anymore to turn into movies. Mm-hmm. If they were to approach you and said they wanted to make Man Plus a movie, would you want it to be a movie? And two, would you want to be involved with making the movie?
Okay, to the first question, let's be honest. If you have a comic that is done and someone tells you, listen, you know this work that you slave on for a few months, John, that is done, do you want a buttload of money so that we can use it to make a movie? Who the hell says no to that?
Alan Moore said no to that with Watchmen, so...
Yeah, but
that's Alan Moore.
that's a different... In Alan Moore's case, he was already published a bunch of books that had sold enormously. But for an author... Most of authors, I think that's the exception that confirms the rule, no?
Yes.
Most authors will say yes. I mean, who cares? I mean, if the movie sucks, my book is still here and it's still good.
Mm-hmm.
You can still buy it and you can still read it and you can still enjoy it, and it will be certainly removed from the movie. It won't change anything. So, yeah, I'd be interested, of course. About being involved or not, I do love, for example, the idea of working on conceptual art for a movie or a video game or something like that. If that could come around as a way of me doing that through working on one of my own properties, it could be interesting. But I'd say that most certainly whenever they advance with those proposals, they prefer to work with their people or with the people that they are used to work with, producers and artists and that stuff. So, but yeah, I wouldn't say no to both as a principle.
Okay, cool. The question just went out of my head. I'm sorry. So you have Man Plus out now. It's a four issue miniseries. You said you're finishing up something with Marvel. Is there a dream character out there, Marvel, DC, IDW, whoever, that you would love to work for or work, you know, write a story for?
Oh, I'd say that my dream characters are the ones that I'm making up. That's for certain. I have lots of stories that I would like to carry around. But on Marvel, my favorite superhero has always been Spider-Man, and I was able to draw him on a bunch of issues on Spider-Verse, on issues that I recently drew for All New Inhumans, F Spider-Man as well. The first issue that I drew for Marvel, actually my first professional gig, the FF book, the Future Foundation, had Spider-Man in it too. So I'm always happy when I work for Marvel and I get to do Spider-Man. That is the one.
Cool. See, so you've already fulfilled all your dreams.
Kind of, in a way. You know, I work for Marvel on the characters that I love, and I Manplus is out there, and I'm very passionate about creator-owned comics, and it is a dream to put Manplus out there, and I hope to keep living it on, publishing more creator-owned stuff.
Right. So actually, I'm sorry, that was the question that went out of my head. When you create a story like Manplus, being an artist first, do you draw and then let the drawings dictate the story, or do you plot out the story first? How do you work when working on a comic?
I'd say that the idea that I'm an artist first is a misconception.
Okay. And
I don't blame you for that, because that is what you see coming, you know, being published from me. But when I was trying to get work from Marvel, I was always coming up with my own stories, you know, writing my own stuff and creating my own properties and books and things like that. So it was not, I was not working for Marvel as an artist, and one day I decided, oh, I'm going to try to write a book. It was not like that. It's fairly natural for me. I always have seen myself as a complete creator in the sense that I can, I want to write and draw and create my own stories. And in practical terms, that means that yeah, I do write my scripts and then I draw them. I come up with an idea that's something loose. I try to see whatever it is related to. I do some research, you know, then I try to see if there is a story attached to that idea. And then usually what I do is I try to do some drawings about it. Maybe one character, maybe a couple of places, you know. I do something in fairly quick, try to see, to visualize what the idea is. And then if I'm feeling good about the drawings and if I'm feeling good about the story, I will go ahead and start writing a full, complete story. I recently wrote 5 issues of a horror story that I had an idea for, and it went like that. So now I have 5 issues written, not in full script, but as a kind of a page. Each issue is contained on a page.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's 5 pages, the document.
Right.
It has a complete story, and that will serve for a pitch in case I decided to move forward with it. And then if the pitch is accepted by any publisher, I will, and this is what happened with Manplus, I will pick that text, that issue, almost scene by scene, you know, describing what happens. And I will write a full script, and then I move to drawing the art.
Okay, cool. And then, so we're actually getting kind of, we're almost at the end. Mm-hmm. So question I always like to ask our guests is, how do you measure success?
For me, it's about you being, I think that's success for a creator on any media is when he can do his own stuff the way that he likes to do it. In my case, Manplus is 100% what I wanted to do, the way that I wanted to do. So that is success for me when it's being published. If you can live from that, life can't get any better.
Cool. We hear that from a lot of creators where they like doing their own stuff, because usually if they're working for a larger outfit, sometimes the, you know, upper echelons get involved or that sort of thing. And
yeah,
you don't get to do exactly.
Yeah, that can happen. And that, well, that is bad, because if you hire a creator, you let him do what is his thing. Otherwise, why are you hiring that person? But even if you let him do his thing, whenever you're working for Marvel or for DC, that's fun and all. But you are limited in what you can do. Of course, you can't do everything that you want. They have their characters, and they, rightfully so, are protecting their properties. So there is only a number of things that you can do, that you can come up. I can, for example, I can't draw anyone smoking on a Marvel book.
Mm-hmm.
Things like that, you know, and that's limited. It's not about being censorship or anything like that. It is the rules of the company. And of course, when you create your own stories, you can You can do whatever you want. And that is, for any creator, I think that is the best thing that you can tell them. Oh, do whatever you want.
Yeah, you also can't have Squirrel Girl kill Superman. But, you know, maybe that's just my thing. I don't know.
That would be a good story, actually. But no, you probably can't.
So where can people find you online?
Well, I have a Tumblr page that is my full name. But if you search André Araújo Tumblr, it will appear. It's andrelimaraújo.tumblr.com. I am on Twitter at ERDNA11, which is André spelled backwards. I thought it was very clever, but it's not that clever. And, well, I'm usually around those places. And I'm on Instagram as well. It's, again, my full name, André Limaraújo. And I'm usually around those places. I post a lot of drawings and works in progress, you know, little sneak peeks of whatever it is that I'm working on. It is pencils, inks, writing, character drawing. I'm usually, almost daily, I post stuff on those social networks. And you can talk to me there. You can ask me stuff there. You can see that whatever it is that I'm working on, and that's it, I guess.
Cool. So definitely, people that are listening, go to TitanComics.com and get your issue of Man Plus today. Is there, real quick, is there any other projects out that you want to plug?
No, really. This is, for me, this is the moment for Man Plus. The issue one is out there. The second issue is coming out in February, mid-February. I don't remember the exact date, but it's something like 16 or 20. It's around those dates. And then it will come out monthly until, it's January, February, March, and April. The four issues. You have covers on issue one, for example. You have a cover by Ryan Stegman. On issue four, you have a cover by Declan Shalvey and Jordi Belair, a pretty beautiful cover. You have extra covers on other issues as well. They all look good. So there's I'm focusing on that, and I think that's what I want to put out there the most. Okay. There is, of course, lots of Marvel stuff for me. Avengers AI is something that I would say you can always go back, pick it up, because it is a kind of a standalone title, you know, that Sam Humphries wrote beautifully, and it was really a lot of fun for me to draw. And stuff like Spider-Verse is also kind of self-contained. And now I'm working on a book that I don't think that has been announced yet, but my most recent run was a couple of issues on All New Inhumans. So go check that out, particularly Man Plus, of course.
Yes, because Marvel doesn't need any more money.
both titles.
But yes, definitely pick up Man Plus. All right, well, André, thank you for being on the show. And
thank you for having me. It was a lot of fun for me. It's always nice to talk to people that are interested in comics and wanted to know more and talk to authors. Thanks for having me and for talking about Man Plus.
Oh, yeah, no, definitely.
Anytime.
Yeah, we love the creative process. That's why we do this. So on that note, boys and girls, as we say each and every week, don't let your cape get caught in the door. Have a good week.